The camera may run, but it will pick nothing up, said Uri.
Then I think you're right, said Russell firmly. We're not ready to validate it if that should happen.
But there are other things we could do.
We can set up a laser beam, shine it on the wall, said Dr. Puthoff.
You could try to bend the light.
That's easy to describe, said Russell gravely. But that would be an earth-shaking event.
I don't know whether you realize that.
Everything Uri does is an earth-shaking event, added Captain Mitchell.
You have seen about 5 such events here tonight, I said.
What we must try to do is to understand Uri and accept what he says as true until proven otherwise.
We should work, but be sensitive to timing in the world at large.
Then we may make it.
Everyone chimed in.
Oh, we'll make it.
Russell added, we'll encounter obstacles beyond belief, but we'll do it.
Captain Mitchell added, we'll be successful.
Uri added, if I do it, I'll only do it one time. But maybe they'll change and let me do it.
Could you remember any former lifetimes?
Asked Dr. Puthoff.
No, replied Uri. How about in between lifetime periods?
He persisted.
No, replied Uri.
Are you a religious person?
Asked Russell.
Well, I believe in God, said Uri.
Then, as an afterthought, he said, what happens if nothing shows on the film?
We have a world-famous cameraman, so that's not likely to be the case, said Russell.
His name is Zef Pressman.
Let's try to figure out what to do tomorrow, requested Dr. Puthoff.
Russell said, why don't we look at the lab briefly in the morning?
Since it is Sunday, why don't we go to Santa Cruz, the beach, horses, the amusement park?
Uri suddenly shouted, look, I picked up this spoon, and it snapped off.
Everyone inspected the new specimen.
Then all discussion stopped while a log was made of these and other unusual events of the evening.
By midnight, an unusual rapport and camaraderie had been firmly implanted in this group.
But in spite of the many signs that had occurred, Uri still felt he would not be permitted to work in the laboratory at Stanford Research Institute.
In spite of his feeling, everyone else was optimistic not only that this was the right group of scientists but that Uri was right for them.
I went to bed that night with a prayer on my lips and in my heart that wisdom would prevail.
Sunday, November 12th, was a day of relaxation. We drove toward the Santa Cruz beach on Highway 17. Hal Puthoff was driving, next to him was Adrian Kennedy, his girlfriend.
Uri, Shippy, and I were in the back seat. Uri asked Hal if he had one of those machine laboratory rings with him.
Hal said, I'm always ready for research. I just happened to have a few in my pocket.
Uri said to him, take one out.
Look at its number and place it in my hand.
Now put your hand over my clenched fist.
Uri then said, I have an empty feeling in my hand.
Uri slowly opened his fist, palm up.
As he did so, it was evident that his hand was empty.
The ring had vanished.
For some time, we drove along in silence.
After an afternoon at the beach, we returned to Hal Puthoff's apartment.
The car was parked at a lower level of the apartment complex in Mountain View, California.
Hal led the way up the stairs, which were surrounded by trees and shrubbery.
At 6:36 p.m. the brass ring that had vanished some hours earlier fell out of the air in front of him, on the stone steps.
Dr. Puthoff was profoundly moved as he grasped what this small event meant for the picture that scientists had developed of physical reality.
It would, quite simply, have to be revised.
When the scientific crew assembled that evening for dinner, we had an exciting hour-long discussion about this remarkable event.
No one questioned its genuineness, but everyone knew that this event could not be used for scientific proof.
The event would have to be repeated under the controlled conditions of the laboratory, and replicated many times.
The next day was Monday, November 13th.
Uri cautiously began to feel his way into laboratory work, knowing full well that he had received no mandate to go ahead.
His first test was on a laboratory instrument called a magnetometer, which measures the strength of magnetic fields. As he concentrated on this instrument, he was the most surprised person in the laboratory when the needle deflected, indicating that his mind had simulated the same effect that a magnetic field would produce.
The test was repeated many times.
There was no question in anybody's mind. Yuri could create effects on the magnetometer that were impossible, according to science. However, we observed that Yuri had to make an excruciating effort to simulate this mental magnetic field. On the next day, Tuesday, November 14, an effort was made at SRI to see if the deformation, or vanishing, of a metal ring could be documented. To do this, an elaborate recording apparatus was used, called acoustic holography. This means that one of the scientists held a bonded metal ring underwater. Yuri touched this ring with one finger. The entire procedure was scanned by sound waves, which made a picture similar to an X-ray picture showing the bones of the hands and the metal ring. The test was such that this acoustic X-ray picture was monitored on a television screen and videotaped. This was considered a cheat-proof method of validating whatever effects Yuri produced on the ring. As Yuri concentrated on this test, he exerted great effort, as he had with the magnetometer. As he did so, it was observed that Yuri also affected the videotape recording and the image on the television screen. These two records showed a distortion of the TV screen image related to Yuri's exertions. In addition, it was seen that the brass ring was being flattened by Yuri's mind power. As this experiment was being run for several hours, the scientists on the floor below Yuri were having great problems. On this floor was located a bank of computers that belonged to the Advanced Research Projects Agency, ARPA, of the United States Department of Defense. One of these computers began to perform so badly on Monday, November 13, and Tuesday, November 14, at those hours during which Yuri was working, that it began to be useless. As the word spread through SRI about Yuri's mental power over the magnetometer, the metal rings, and video recording systems, somebody got the idea that the computer malfunction might be caused by Yuri. However, there was no proof that this was the case. My chief concern at this time was whether or not Yuri would continue to work at the laboratory. All the signs seemed to indicate that he was being given all power and support. But my tape recorder did not give me any clear text assurance that there had been any change in policy. Finally, on November 15, as Yuri and I were resting from the day's work at our apartment, my tape recorder started to run, and the following brief message was recorded: "One more test to do tomorrow, then it is finished in the laboratory. Start writing a book on Yuri immediately. The rotational energy that we use is on a galactic scale, and we use it from outside the galaxy. It does not exist on the particle level. Farewell." I discussed this instruction with Yuri. He felt that since things were going so well in the laboratory, he would go on working until no more effects occurred. I agreed to this idea of gradual disengagement. However, I had pressing business back east, and I left Yuri and Shippy at SRI and returned home on November 16. I would hear from Yuri each day from California, and each day he continued the laboratory testing successfully. He was still amazed that he had been allowed to continue to work in this scientific laboratory. On November 18, Yuri remembered that he still had the film in the Nikon F camera, which he had shot over Germany on November 4. He got special processing of the film just in case there was a UFO picture. When the film was returned, the Kodak color prints, 5 of them, showed UFOs on them. Yuri called me up in great excitement about these photos, which he said Hal Puthoff was then examining. I begged him to get the negatives and the prints from Hal as soon as possible. He said he would do this immediately. Hal told Yuri that he had the negatives and the prints at home. When Hal looked for them, they were all gone except one print showing 3 UFOs, which I still have in my possession. How the negatives and prints disappeared, no one knows. It was a great loss of data. Yuri went on working, saying each day that this was his last day of laboratory research. This day-to-day procedure was also hard on the SRI researchers, who found it difficult to make plans for extended studies with Yuri. On December 1, I received disturbing news from Yuri by phone. It seemed that the computer bank of ARPA was giving more and more problems when Yuri was working in the laboratory. Certain investigators from Washington, led by George Lawrence, of ARPA, deliberately started the rumor that Uri was a charlatan who had deceived the SRI research staff into believing he had genuine powers. This rumor came to John Wilhelm, of Time magazine, in Los Angeles, and he initiated a reportorial investigation. I heard from two sources in San Francisco that laboratory reports of the Geller experiments had been stolen from SRI and offered for sale to Charles Peets, of the San Francisco Chronicle, and to James Bolan, of Psychic magazine. James Bolan, as publisher and editor of Psychic magazine, refused to buy these purloined documents. Bolan was also the first person to capture on motion picture film Uri's bending and breaking of a fork. See Psychic, June 1973 cover story. Some idea of the rumors circulating at this time is given in a quote from a letter report written by one of the ARPU investigators, Dr. Ray Hyman, professor of psychology, University of Oregon, dated December 28, 1972. Hyman said that the story of Geller was not yet over, and that since he had come back from SRI, he had talked with a high official on the phone to give his report. The official told him that new information had come in about Geller, but that he could not tell him about it because it was too complex. Hyman thought he meant it was too complicated to talk about on the phone. No, he meant it was complex in the sense that it was highly sensitive and must be kept secret. Hyman got the impression that the new information was embarrassing to certain important individuals and had to be kept confidential. The true fact is that the new information which must be kept secret is that the researchers proved that Uri could concentrate on a videotape record and wipe it out or distort it. Uri completed his work at SRI in the middle of December 1972 and returned to Ossining. We compared notes as to his experiences at SRI and the rumors that had come to me. There was no question in our minds that we were caught in a national security issue in the United States, as we had been in Israel a year before. We had no idea why IS had created this situation. Uri told me that he had had no intention, consciously or unconsciously, of affecting any instruments other than those he was concentrating on in an experiment. Now there were two governments in the world who had become alerted to Uri's powers. Why? Both Uri and I were as much in the dark about the purpose of IS as were the officials in the US Defense Department. There was nothing we could do but sit and wait for further developments. On December 18, Uri, Shippy, and I were sitting around the dining room table after dinner. I was telling a story about the solar system and some of its movements. Uri was deeply interested in what I told him, especially when I dramatized the vast distances that exist in our galaxy, and between it and other galaxies. We retired to the living room to watch an 8 p.m. television show. I walked up to the TV set to turn it on. As I backed away from the screen, my heel hit something on the floor which had not been there a moment before. I looked down, and there was a drinking glass made from a 7-Up bottle. My daughter Illyria had made it for me. I knew that this glass had been in the kitchen after dinner, and now it had been transported here. This was a sign to get the tape recorder, which I did, and I placed it on a table near me. It was in the off condition. I knew that if there was a message, the recorder would be turned on by the power of IS. Then I sat down by the fireplace some 10 feet from the TV set to watch the show. In a few minutes I had to get up from my chair to adjust the color on the screen. I walked across the empty carpet to the set, tuned it, and backed away, checking the image on the screen. My foot bumped into an object. I looked down. It was a 12-inch globe of the Earth, which moments earlier had been in my study upstairs on the second floor. Uri and Shippy had not seen the globe appear. It was suddenly there. Uri began to feel uneasy and said he felt that a UFO was near. We went to a large bay window looking west into a clear sky. We saw a single red light in the sky but could not be sure that it was a spacecraft. Then we heard the tape recorder being switched on behind us. This is what appeared on the tape. In a mechanical computer voice, Andrea Puharich, we heard your talk at the dinner table. You are right. The human mind is too small to grasp the immensity of the cosmos. You cannot know its secret. Andrea Puharich, at your insistence we completed the experiments. You were under test for your loyalty then, and you passed. Now you are under test again. You are on the right track with your ideas about how to present Yuri. But our computers will always be with you. Yuri will always be prepared to answer your questions with our advice. We leave you now. Farewell. Yuri, Shippy, and I discussed the meaning of those words. This was the first comment we had received on the scientific experiments since November 15th, and it was gratifying. I personally felt the weight of this new test mentioned by Iz, especially since, as always, I did not know what the test was and had to rely purely on my inner sense of the truth. The loyalty referred to above was, I think, my loyalty to Re and to the welfare of man. The globe was still on the floor where it had appeared. At 9:25 p.m. we were talking about it, trying to figure out its symbolic meaning, when it suddenly vanished. We started a search of the house to find out where it had gone. We found it on the dining room table, placed exactly in the center as measured with a ruler. Alongside it had appeared a German 5-pfennig coin. That evening I began to suffer a headache and extreme fatigue. I did not know whether I was getting a case of the flu or whether this had something to do with the test. This became a kind of nameless agony without content for me. It hung on to me by day and by night for 3 days. I must confess that all I could do was to pray for help through this crisis of the soul. Finally, on December 21st relief came. Yuri and I were sitting in the kitchen having a cup of coffee and comparing notes on the aches and pains we had both been experiencing since the evening of December 18th. At 2:57 p.m. Yuri got up without saying a word. He looked strange to me. I asked him if he felt all right. He said not a word but marched off to the sitting room. I hastily got my tape recorder and followed him. He sat quietly facing north. I placed the tape recorder on the coffee table and waited. At 3 p.m. it switched on, and I placed the monitor earphone in my ear. This is what I heard, Andrea Puharich, in the past 24 hours you have passed the test successfully. This is the last time ever in your life that you will have to be tested. App, please, tell me what the test was. The test had to do with the control of your mind, and it was successful. App, is that why I have felt so exhausted not only during the past 24 hours but for the past 2 weeks? Yes, that is the reason. You are on your own now, use your brain. Use your ideas. Be clever, we will be in touch with you more readily now. Farewell. I looked at Yuri. He was still sitting in deep meditation. He did not seem to be aware of me. I transcribed this short segment of tape. I could scarcely bear to wipe out the message on the tape, but I had no other choice. What can a man say after he has heard such words? I observed that this taping was not preceded before or after by a physical sign, as in the past. Yuri's behavior was like that of a Praetorian guard. This time it was not as if his actions were meant to be a sign. I entered into Yuri's silence by bowing my head and my will before the ruler of the cosmos. Not only had my transgression been forgiven, but I had been blessed. A new phase of communication seemed to open up on the next day because I was allowed to ask questions, and got answers, however cryptic. App, I need information about what you did at Stanford Research Institute and its purpose. After you insisted that Yuri be validated, counsel was taken higher and higher, and it was decided that Yuri could be validated just this once. And he may never be allowed to do such work again under laboratory control. App, I need advice as to how much I am allowed to tell people about Yuri's work on Earth. You must tell the world everything about us. Tell how the information comes through all sources, tape is a good example. App, I need to know more about the history of your role in Earth life if I am to be effective. You are close to the answer in all that you are thinking. You must tell the world what you deduce to be right. But we cannot tell you all of our secret history. More fragments of information appeared on January 12th while Yuri and I were driving in my car south on Lexington Avenue in New York City. The time was about 11:30 p.m. when the tape recorder was actuated invisibly. Andrea Puharich, you are free for 2 years to make all moves and decisions on Earth. You are no longer under test. But we also need the brain of Uri Shippy and you to help us with many other civilizations in space. App, can you tell me roughly what the goals are for the year 1973? We cannot forecast for you. App, I do need more help about your history. We cannot reveal our history yet to you. App, are there other civilizations in our galaxy? Yes, within this car there could be 20,000 civilizations in an inner space. There are untold millions of civilizations in the galaxy. You cannot possibly understand all this. App, but do any of them interact? Or are they sealed each in his own compartment? A few do interact. Write the book. The knowledge book will not be given in the next 2 years unless our computers change. Farewell. While these bits of instruction were coming in, there was a great deal of trouble brewing around us. The tapping of our telephone in our signing was extended, it was reported, to our friends and colleagues in New York City. We were being followed everywhere. Time magazine was increasing its interest in the SRI work with Uri. John Wilhelm, of Time, called from Los Angeles to tell me that he had obtained a copy of a report by George Lawrence, of ARPA, in which Lawrence was trying to discredit both SRI and Uri. Wilhelm was unable to get information from SRI, they had refused to talk to him, so he asked to come east to see me and Uri in New York. I told him that I had given my word to SRI not to talk about the research, but that Uri and I would be prepared to talk to him on a personal level. John Wilhelm arrived at my home in Ossining on the morning of January 18, 1973. We learned from him for the first time of the vicious nature of the accusations being circulated against Uri and SRI. It appeared that upper personnel were making every effort to discredit the scientists, Mitchell, Doug, and Puthoff personally, in order to discredit Uri. Wilhelm said he was trying to get at the facts but SRI would not reveal any. He found that his people at Time had already concluded that Uri was a fraud. In fact, he said, senior editor Leon Giroff had already bet him a blue German folding bicycle that Uri Geller was a charlatan and a fraud. John Wilhelm spent 12 hours talking to Uri and witnessing a few small demonstrations of his powers. He was perspicacious, fair, open-minded, and persevering in his interview. When he finished his interview, he told us that he accepted what he had seen, and was willing to continue to examine Uri's work objectively. But he commented that no one would accept his findings at the headquarters of Time magazine. Since John was so open to Uri, Uri opened up to him and revealed that his powers were due to the presence of an extraterrestrial civilization. John reminded us of the cover story he had done a year before for Time on extraterrestrial life and of his deep interest. He said that if we ever had proof for this claim, he would like to be the one to report it to the world, but he would need overwhelming proof for such a historical event. We told him that we had no way of knowing if proof would be allowed. We did not explain that there was still a contingency as to whether man would be allowed to know of and view the landings. I believe that we honestly revealed to this good man all that we were permitted to say and that he was free to report whatever he felt able to tell his people. He was quite frank in telling us that he would not yet dare to report to his editors about the powers behind Uri. He left us that evening and caught an 11:36 p.m. train back to New York City. I drove him to the station in Ossining, and when I returned home, I found a most unusual thing at the foot of the outside stairs to my house. It was my large Farquhar clear plastic astronomical globe. It had been last seen in my upstairs study. I took the globe indoors to inspect it. Now, I must explain the construction of this globe. There was a large clear plastic outer globe with the stars on it. Inside was a smaller one of the Earth, also of clear plastic. Inside of this sealed Earth globe was a foreign object, which had never been there before. It was a piece of my own printed medical stationery. On it was typed a message, and the type was the same as that of my Selectric IBM typewriter. I could read the message through the two plastic globes. It said, "You are all alone now, all of you for a long time." I called Uri and Shippy. We read this letter sealed inside of the globe. There was no way to get it out. The message depressed us. What did it mean? It was true that I had been told that I was to make all judgments and decisions on my own for 2 years. But that had already been said. Why was a new message being sent? It even occurred to us that Uri's major powers might be withdrawn. This discussion went on, and we became more and more depressed. On January 21, Solveig Clark and I were taking a walk along the nearby Highway 9A with Wellington. Wellington suddenly stepped in front of a car and was mortally wounded. I held him in my arms, and he looked at me with astonishment, as he died. I had lost my friend, but somehow I knew this was meant to be. However, it was not a good omen, with all the storm that was brewing around us. Hal Puthoff and Russ Targ arrived in Ossining on January 27 to show us the movie film they had made of the experiments with Uri. They told us that the management of SRI had decided to stand firm, to back Hal and Russ, and to make a public announcement backing their findings with Uri. This was heartwarming news for us. On February 2, we were driving from New York City toward Ossining at noon on the New York State Thruway in a driving rainstorm. As we were turning into exit 7A at Elmsford, New York, we both saw a welcome sight. There, some 30 feet in front of and above our car, was Horace. He was fluttering in the rain and air, hovering over us so that we could see him. I slammed the car to a skidding halt. Horace glided to a nearby dead tree, landed, and looked down upon us from his imperial height. How happy Uri and I were to see him, after a whole year. We looked at Horace for some 10 minutes, then he glided silently down into the woods and vanished. Uri and I looked at each other, we both knew the meaning of Horace's appearance. We were in danger again. But we were also protected. When we got to the house, Uri and I sat in my study to discuss our situation. The tape recorder started to run. But this time there was no message. The tape recorder ran on, blank. Then a letter appeared on top of the tape recorder. I picked up the letter. It was dated 1949, with no month or day. It was from my departed friend, Dr. Eugene Milne Cosgrove. The letter was still in its original envelope addressed to me in Camden, Maine, with the stamp of that vintage on it. I read the letter, it was most poignant. Dr. Cosgrove was describing to me the nameless terror that struck him when he realized he had just suffered a heart attack while alone in Flathead, Montana. I remembered having received this letter some 24 years before, but I had not seen it since. Where had it come from? With Horace on the scene, and this acute reminder of the nameless terror of impending death, what was in store for us? The next day I received a phone call from Charles Reynolds, who represented himself as a photographer for Time magazine. He said he wanted to meet with Uri. I put him off until I could check his credentials. I found out that he was a magician and a freelance photographer. He was part of a Time cabal to lure Uri into a confrontation with magicians in an attempt to discredit him. I talked the problem over with Uri. I advised him that every indication I had showed me that a lynch was in the offing. I even suspected that someone at Time was being pressured to do a hatchet job on Uri and myself. Uri decided to go ahead and demonstrate for Time, and that no matter what happened, it had to be for the best. I called Charles Reynolds back and made a date to have the Time staff meet Uri on Tuesday, February 6, 1973. We met in the offices of John Derniak, present on behalf of Time were editors Fred Golden and Leon Giroff. Magicians Charles Reynolds and James Randi, photographer Peter Bashk, some secretaries, and Uri and I. I opened the meeting by stating emphatically that Uri was not a magician and had submitted his claims to science for judgment. One of the magicians immediately made the statement that Uri was known to be a magician, based on material in our Geller file. Uri explained that he was not a magician, that he had appeared in Israel and Germany in stage shows where magicians had performed, and that his powers of telepathy and psychokinesis were real. One of the Time editors informed us that everything was being taped. We consented. The atmosphere was that of a kangaroo court. Uri was damned if he refused to demonstrate and damned if he did demonstrate. He chose to run the gauntlet and demonstrate. He asked me to leave the room so that the charge of collusion would be eliminated. I did not observe what Yuri did for these people, so my report is second-hand. Yuri was annoyed by the hostile atmosphere and made a slow start with a telepathy demonstration, but he did eventually succeed. The magicians said they could duplicate this trick. Then Yuri bent a fork by lightly stroking it.